At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE. Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon. Presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 5:05. You are listening to Women Talk. Yay, it's back. I've missed it. With us in the studio today, we have Lucy Mulligan and Teresa Jacobson Gonzalez. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Thank you both for coming in. If you're listening at home and you'd like to get involved, you are more than welcome. You can give us a call on 952-784. In fact, I'm going to press this button, then I don't have to say it all. There we go.
To contact TRE, please call 952-784000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. What a beautiful day.
Perfect. So first of all, Happy New Year.
And to you too.
Happy New Year.
Did you have a good Christmas and everything?
Yeah, it was lovely. Ate way too much though.
Yeah,
as usual.
Easily done. Easily done. Were you here for Christmas?
Yeah, I was. It was so nice.
Yeah.
Better than being in the UK where it's so cold.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
one.
Yes. Mixed it up here and there. And I can tell you, I'm so dying to get back here.
But there's such great weather we're having.
Absolutely. A little bit too good, actually.
Yeah. Tempting to stay.
Yeah.
So there's an article I found about bad Christmas presents. For many, the real joy of Christmas comes from the pleasure of giving a thoughtful present and seeing the face of the recipient light up. However, for others, giving the perfect present does not seem to be high on the priorities list. The miserable Christmas list includes, so people were asked in a survey what was their worst Christmas present, a dustpan and brush. That's terrible. Out of date chocolate and wine, vodka gifted to a pregnant woman, and used deodorant.
Oh,
I mean, what?
Oh God.
One respondent had received a book by a conspiracy theorist about doomsday and aliens. Another person received over £100 worth of dairy chocolate from their grandmother, despite being severely allergic to dairy. Well, that's a problem, isn't it? Can you think of a bad Christmas present that you've had? Not necessarily this year, but in the past.
I mean, I'm quite lucky. My mum is very on it. She knows exactly. Oh. Yeah, my mum's really organised with stuff and very thoughtful with her gifts. But a few, yeah, I can think of a few things. Like I'm saying, my mum is super thoughtful when there is a certain pressure to give her the right gifts.
Right.
So my brother and I always kind of come together, and I think it was in the first few years of dating, my brother and I went to her partner, and they'd just started dating.
Yeah.
And we kind of said to him, like, what have you got? And he goes, don't worry, I've sorted it out. And bless, he bought her a space heater, which my mum wasn't that thrilled about when she opened it. She's like, what am I going to do with this? I don't want a space heater. And bless, his whole kind of premise was, yeah, but you always complain that you have cold feet. And so when you're sat outside, so I brought you this. And oh my God, it was in a huge box and she was opening it. And my grandpa always plays a joke, my grandma, he'll buy her like a piece of jewelry, but put it in a box, in a box, in a bag, in a box.
Oh, lovely. That's
so she's
fun.
Opening it and she's like, what is this? And my mum kind of thought that was happening. She was like, oh my gosh, a piece of jewelry. And then it was a space heater.
Oh yeah.
And she was like, right. Oh,
cold feet.
Well, no, they're still together and they have a beautiful relationship. Yeah. So.
Actually, that reminds me of probably the worst present I ever got was a foot massager. Okay. I would love that. I mean, it sounds good, but you didn't see this one.
it was a
really bad one. Oh. And it just stayed under the sofa for years. Only literally to sort of threw it away a couple of years ago. I mean, it was just the most useless present I've ever received. But I always say the same thing. Christmas is at the same time every year, the same as birthdays and anniversaries. Mm-hmm. And I think people don't think about it enough. I think if you plan it properly throughout the year, then you know what somebody needs or wants. And another thing, I mean, I've certainly with adult children, I've stopped trying to buy them presents. And I know that they prefer money and, you know, little details, but definitely the money helps. So I think, you've got to know who wants what and think about it. But planning helps, I think.
Absolutely. I always get, not told off, but my husband and my family always laugh at me because I have a list on my phone with all people closest to me.
I've started mine already.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I just have it constantly. Yeah. So whenever I'm chatting with a friend or my partner and he's saying, oh, we're watching TV, and he's saying, oh, I really want one of those. I'm like, I disappear into another room with my phone, write it down, and then I don't have to worry about it. And when it comes to his birthday or Christmas, I look at my list and go, start working my way through it. And it makes so much sense, because otherwise, yeah, it can be a stressful, oh no, it's Christmas Eve, what am I going to get?
And absolutely. No, and I think also re-gifting is the word I learned a couple of years ago. Isn't a bad thing either.
No, definitely not. That is a good one. I remember my grandfather bought his wife a flip top bin.
That's practical.
That was quite fancy.
Very practical.
Yes, very fancy. Yes, but it's true. It comes from the same place as the heater.
Yeah.
You know, if couples are discussing things that they need for the house,
well, there's a point. Yeah,
exactly.
And the light bulb goes off. And he thinks, I'll get that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a thoughtful gift from the point of view that it's something that they've obviously said that they need or would benefit them. It's just not exactly particularly romantic. There's a piece about New Year's resolutions. I thought it's something we could talk about. Do you do New Year's resolutions?
I don't. I think that one can improve oneself throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
But having coached for many years, it's something that's very interesting that I found. And as you know, I run the English language services online. I found that most people, actually, there's an absolute surge of wanting to learn a new language and changing things all at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, we're sort of inundated now with so many people want to start new courses.
Yeah.
Because it's January and because they've said to themselves, this is it.
Yeah.
But I've been with people that I've coached and I said, okay, we're going to do a time vault here. We're going to literally write down what you want to do for the year. We're actually going to seal it and we're going to open it up again next January. And I get them to do it again. I get them to write it down. And actually, it's exactly the same as the year before.
Mm.
And it just makes me feel that people haven't improved and they haven't changed. And, you know, just thinking about what you're doing throughout the year is enough to make things better. And don't wait for the beginning of the year to do that.
Is it the typical kind of, you know, lose weight, exercise more,
It's all the same. Yeah.
I have a personal trainer who comes on the radio every month, Scott Roberts, and fitness expert. And he was saying as we were coming up to Christmas, there's no need for Christmas to be a nightmare in terms of all the temptations of eating more and exercising less if you're on the track, on the right track for the rest of the year.
Exactly.
You know, you can have a 2-week blowout where you don't go to the gym, you're eating and drinking loads more than you would ever normally do the rest of the year. If you're, you know, doing right the rest of the year, but if you're not going to the gym and eating and drinking loads throughout the year, then doubling it at Christmas is obviously not a good place to be in. So that's the...
And I think it's that binge over Christmas that we all do. We all eat so much, drink too much. It's just what happens. I think that's what puts a lot of people into the, oh my gosh, I've got to start losing weight, or I've got to start working out, or I want to... There's a place that I want to be and I'm not anywhere near that. So, okay, perfect time. January, new year, new me. That's the whole thing that everyone, you know, new year, new me. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to become in this 2023 year.
Mm.
But I kind of have the same opinion that I don't, if not now, when? So that's what I've always kind of thought of. why wait until the new year? Why wait until you turn another birthday? Or like, why wait for that stuff to happen?
Yeah,
when you can just start it now and create habits. I mean, I do have, I wouldn't say New Year's resolutions. I have goals for the year. That's what I, and I think that changing like resolutions to goals is quite helpful.
Yeah.
Certain goals that I maybe set for myself, but also that are realistic, because I think a lot of people will go and go to the extreme. I'm going to lose 15 kilos, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And they don't like keep themselves accountable.
And it's short-term goals as well, isn't it? You don't need to think, oh, this year I want to do this. Mm-hmm. You need to think short-term, you know. So for the next month I'm going to do this, or for the next 3 months I want to achieve this. And that helps as well. And being motivated, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's easier.
Yeah, being realistic.
That's a huge thing.
If you're not going to the gym and then you suddenly go, right, come January, I'm going to go to the gym five times a week and I'm going to live off salad and I'm going to... It's just ridiculous.
Mm. Or somebody who's never ran and say, I'm going to do a marathon.
Yeah.
Like, start with a little run and then build it up. I think the realistic...
And habit is a very good thing to acquire. So if you are getting into the habit of doing something, you're going to feel better anyway. Mm. But everything in moderation.
Yeah.
Even moderation sometimes.
Yes, I like that. Moderation in moderation. So how about dry January? That's a thing. I've done it once, I think, a couple of years ago. And it was, I did it and I didn't lose any weight. And I thought, well, I'm not going to bother doing that again. So that was experience of it. Have you ever done it?
Well, why? My question is, why do people do it? Is that because they've sort of drunk too much over Christmas? Or is it just a general thing? I don't know why.
Yeah, I think it's, if you could go for 2 weeks without drinking anyway, and it's not a big part of your life and you're not really bothered, then there'd kind of be no point. But sometimes living out here, you can be in the kind of zone of, you know, oh, it's lovely weather, let's go for a drink after work. And, you know, people can easily get into the environment where they feel like they're drinking too much, whether they're having a glass of wine every day and they've decided I don't want to drink every day, or binging at the weekends, or there can be different reasons. But I think, a general realization that possibly they're drinking too much, and let's have a month off and see how we feel.
I haven't done it, I think also because I just don't drink that much. I think the last time I was here I told you about our hump night we have which is we're allowed drink on a Wednesday and a Saturday, but that's because lockdown just it got out of hand, I think. But I think in general, and also as you get older, I think the amount of units that you're supposed to have are fewer, and obviously to feel healthier you feel alcohol quicker, I think. Also as you get older, you're okay, Lucy, for now.
Exactly. I'm a student, so dry January literally just does not exist for me. And I would think if I suggested that to any of my friends, they would think I've lost the plot. Because I think especially like I go to university in the UK, so drinking culture is like a very big thing there. But I think it's admirable. People that want to do dry January, or that are maybe sober curious, I think that's a really cool thing, because it's a challenge for yourself. If, like you said, if you're drinking every day, if you barely drink, then it's kind of... no need for it. But I think it's great, you know, choosing a healthier lifestyle. I've never done it. It's not something really that is a huge thing.
I think also the Spanish culture, which we're all, you know, submerged in here, is a very normal thing to have a drink with a meal. And it's not so much the binge drinking as you see in England.
It's at lunchtime, at dinner.
Exactly. You're eating something. It's accompanied by a tapa, whatever it is. And so it feels healthier. And actually, they say, you know, red wine is good for you. Obviously, not gallons of it. So I think some alcohol is actually good, and children grow up here as it is part of the daily life. And I think if you start restricting it, it becomes, or you know, it may turn into an obsession or something. That anything that is repressed is never a good idea anyway. But alcohol here is seen as something very natural and part of a meal. So I think as long as you can do that, then you don't necessarily need to stop doing anything radically.
Back to moderation again.
There we are.
I completely agree with that, especially with the Spanish.
You can't. You're a student. Moderation doesn't exist.
No, not with moderation, but I agree with the whole idea of in Spanish culture, it's so normal to have to introduce alcohol into not children, not saying give your 3-year old a glass of wine, although it might be appealing sometimes to parents. But I think in my experience growing up in Spain, and comparing it to my friends that went to, that started really drinking when they went to university, I think because it was so normalized in the culture, and my mum did let me have a glass of wine at an appropriate age, with meals or whatever it was, or a glass of champagne, you know, like it
didn't feel like such a naughty taboo thing.
Whereas I remember going to university and I would meet people that would just binge drink themselves and get themselves into really dangerous situations.
Absolutely.
And so that's quite scary. And I was always kind of grateful to my mum because she really normalised that and normalised that conversation.
Absolutely.
Of how to drink responsibly and how to have that good relationship with alcohol.
It can make a huge difference there, definitely. Well, we'll take a break. We'll be back the other side.
Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's 20 past five already. You're listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today, Lucy Mulligan and Teresa Jacobson Gonzalez. If you're listening at home and you'd like to get involved, you can. Here's how.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
What a beautiful day.
Okay, I thought we could touch on the subject of Prince Harry, because it's been really difficult going through the papers to find articles for us to talk about today and to avoid everything Harry, because it's just everywhere. And I pulled out this article just because there were a couple of headlines on it that really annoyed me. So it's the article's written by a journalist who I'm assuming, by what I've worked out by reading the article, has never met either Prince Harry or Meghan Markle. And it says things like, Harry would be happier if Meghan put her hurt aside. Memo to Meghan, letting your husband take your side against his family never ends well. And it's that whole rhetoric that's kind of going out that everything that's going wrong with Harry and Meghan and them leaving the UK and leaving the royal family is all Meghan's doing, and Harry is just completely taken in by his new wife and is just following her like a lost puppy, and she's this evil, horrible woman that's like ruined the royal family. And I think that is absolutely disgusting and clearly wrong. Having seen the documentary and read part of the book, haven't finished it yet, but, you know, really enjoying it. And it's quite clear. He's even said that a lot of it has been his doing, his observations, things that have gone on in the family. And he's made decisions that he wanted to get his wife out of that situation and try and protect his wife, clearly in the way that he couldn't protect his mum. And there's obviously that really emotional, sad connection with what happened with his mother. And he's desperate for it to not happen with his wife. And I just think that's lovely. You know, how can we not see that and think, what a lovely man trying to protect his wife? But yet all everybody seems to be doing is attacking him. Okay, I'll shut up now.
I think I'm pleased I saw the documentary as well. I think that really was an eye opener. And however you want to take it from one angle or the other, you really get to see something that the press and media don't let you normally see. So I think that it was very sensible of them to actually create this documentary for us to all to get an idea of their private lives.
You can see how much they love each other.
Absolutely. And that's actually the effect that it gave me. I binged watched it.
Yeah.
And you just don't want to stop watching it till the end, you know.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Yeah.
And that, like, seeing them be so in love and have this like beautiful romance develop. That was something I didn't necessarily see during the engagement or the wedding.
No.
That was never really in the paper, but seeing them, where did they go? They went to Africa together, and, you know, that was very sweet to see this kind of love, this very pure love develop.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think after that, it just, I really enjoyed the documentary, but the whole,
I think it's very difficult, and that's, I think, the topic that certainly I've been discussing with friends and family, that the being in the public eye is very complicated. And you're always going to get people for and against you, but it just so happens that the royal family are always in the public eye. And I think what he's done is step back and doesn't want to be counted as one of them. And of course, he's going to be up for scrutiny and he's going to be criticised. And as you say, I don't think that person, that journalist, has ever met him, and he's already judging, you know, his personal and private situation.
I find it interesting how, you know, the fact that he's made the decision to leave when that happened, which was before the documentary, before the book, before all this massive amount of publicity, people were absolutely up in arms at that, never mind anything else. People hated the fact that they wanted to leave the UK and were stepping down from royal duties, and you know, people were absolutely going mad about that. And I kind of thought, well, why can't they? If he wants to step down and remove himself from the royal family and the UK, he has absolutely the right to do that. And who is everybody else to tell him that it's wrong? I just find it bizarre.
Well, and it's happened in the past, hasn't it, for love?
Yeah.
And just that, the fact that people can make that big decision, it means it must be real love.
Yeah.
And I think people are too cynical nowadays to even accept that.
Yeah. We need more love in the world.
Oh, all you need is love.
Exactly, exactly. So let's move on to something else. Trouble sticking to your new diet? Try sniffing chocolate. This made me laugh. Would that work, do you think, if you were trying to avoid something like chocolate or alcohol or biscuits or crisps or whatever, something that you're trying to cut down on? If you sniffed it, wouldn't that make you want it more?
That sounds like torture.
It does, doesn't it?
You're putting yourself through misery. That's awful. I don't know how that would deter you. I would be interested to know about the science, or, you know, whoever came up with that kind of concept, because that's just dangling the carrot, isn't it? That's just...
I like the expression, out of sight, out of mind.
Yes, yes.
And that's it. If you don't see it, you don't think about it.
Exactly.
And if you are a chocoholic, then you need to stop looking at chocolate, smelling it, seeing it. You need to keep it away.
If it's not in the house, you can't eat it.
That's it.
Very smart. Very smart logic.
Yes. This one I thought was a really interesting subject, something completely different. Talking about looks and vanity. There was an article by Dame Joan Collins, and she says, "I can't look my best without being vain. So are the trolls who attack me for it just jealous?" So she's obviously talking about the fact that she cares about the way she looks. She may have had various procedures and obviously, you know, wears makeup and has her hair looking nice. You know, she takes care of her appearance. And she says that if that means that she's vain, she's quite happy to say that she is vain, because she cares about how she looks and how she comes across. But people are kind of attacking her for it. You know, we're back to that whole, you know, social media or the papers or whatever, and people kind of having a go at people that they've never met and don't really know anything about them really in their personal lives. Do you think you can care about the way you look without being vain? Because vain has really bad connotations to it, doesn't it? We see vain as being a bad thing, I think, don't we?
Yeah, like you're self-obsessed, self-indulged.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, vanity, yeah, now that I think about it, it's always had such a negative connotation.
Yeah.
But I don't think looking after yourself and doing things that make you feel good, I think the reason you do things for yourself is a big thing. So if you're doing it to make yourself feel more confident or because you like it, then I think that's fantastic. If you're having procedures done or whatever because you feel that you have to, then I don't think you should. I think you should always do what you feel is best for you. But if you're just trying to keep up, you know, with the Joneses and keep up with social media and looking young or being the most attractive, then I wouldn't say that that was
the best reason
behind it, you know, to go into it. But I mean, is that vanity that bad? You're not hurting anybody.
No, it's true.
I think it's a social pressure, though, as well. And the circles you move in. And we were watching just the news last night. And I said, it must be so difficult to be a newsreader. And now these newsreaders are standing and they're walking around. They're not even behind a desk anymore. And it just made me feel that there must be so much pressure, especially for women, to look the part and to look right and to look perfect constantly. I very much agree now with the younger generation of barefaced and this is me, and I mean they're constantly showing the real them, you know, what what they really look like, which is very nice now. And I can say my daughters are sort of happy to go out without makeup on now, which is difficult, I think, from a certain generation. And as well as they'll spend 3 hours in front of a mirror putting makeup on.
I can say that I've definitely done that before, but also likewise, I'll happily go out without any makeup on. I think that's quite a healthy relationship.
A bit of both.
Whereas like I would go to university and I'd sit in a lecture at 9 o'clock in the morning and there'd be a girl next to me that would have a full face of makeup and had her hair blown out. And I would, you know, I'd rather just have the extra hour in bed. But, you know, I think...
So she's vain.
Well, I wouldn't say she's vain. I'd maybe say she just cares a little bit more than I do. I think for me, it's...
Just in case she's listening, you said
exactly.
That.
Well, hopefully she's in the UK, so she won't be listening to me. But, I don't know. I think vanity, I don't think it's a bad thing.
No. It's interesting, the difference, isn't it? I mean, I'm kind of associating it with, you know, people checking themselves out in the mirror a lot. You know, if you're walking by the street and there's like a mirrored wall and people kind of stop and go, oh, you know, stand there and check the hair. And, you know, if you saw a guy doing that in the street, you'd kind of go, oh, look how vain he is checking himself out in the mirror. And it would be seen as a kind of laugh, vanity kind of thing. But in terms of just, you know, wanting to look nice, I wouldn't see that as vain.
I think it's actually very good for your confidence.
So
it's a question of balance.
I mean, going back to the mirror thing, I definitely look at myself every time I walk in the mirror. Not necessarily saying I'm checking myself out and you know, but I feel like it's natural.
But you can at your age. As you get older, try and avoid mirrors.
That's true. But what about the idea of people kind of the whole trolling situation? I hate that. I really feel uncomfortable with that. You know, when you've got a beautiful woman, whether she's got makeup on or not, you know, people who think it's okay to post comments and criticize how people look. I mean, it's become so normal now, hasn't it? But it's absolutely shocking. I see it all the time. If it's someone I'm following on Twitter or Instagram, or, you know, and they've posted something up, and I mean, I don't often comment myself, but, you know, I might sometimes look at the comments, and most people are saying, oh, you know, love that, if there's a positive message, you know, oh, great message, or love your work, or oh, you look great, or love the swimming costume, or, and then you'll see someone being absolutely vile, you know, really ripping into the way they look, calling them fat, calling them ugly. I mean, really horrendous, and you just go, how can anyone say that?
But the thing is, it's public now. So anybody can read what anybody thinks, and that's where the problem is, I think. And people will express themselves, and it's them that have the problem. It's obviously not the people they're commenting on, but you're in the public eye, so you have to accept that there are very ill people, there are very dissatisfied people, and people who just can't control their emotions.
I was reading Rylan Clark's autobiography.
Fantastic.
I think he's great. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm like an obsessive fan or anything, but I think he's funny.
I enjoy
watching him, so I thought, oh, I'll read his autobiography, and it was really, really interesting. And he writes the way he speaks, which is hilarious. But he was talking about this troll, someone who'd been commenting on his Twitter, saying that they wanted to kill him, basically. This guy who was saying, I want to slit your throat. I mean, really horrendous threats of violence. And he got really quite scared by it. And then however many months later, he came out of a stage door somewhere and there was a man there saying, oh, hi, can I get a selfie? Can we get a picture? And he said, yeah, of course. And he said, he basically said only once has he ever said no, but he always always makes a point of always, even in really bad situations when there's things going on in his life, he always says, it doesn't take 2 seconds to be nice and kind and say, yeah, okay, and, you know, lets them take a picture. And he did with this guy, and he said, yeah, no problem. And the guy said, oh, thanks, and took a picture. And he thought, I recognize him. Where do I recognize him from? And he went back and looked online and realized it was this guy.
Yeah, that's and so he'd common.
Been, yeah, putting threats on his life, threatening violence, and all he wanted was a selfie. I mean, what's going on in people's heads?
It's obsession, isn't it?
Isn't it? Mm. Really scary.
It's terrifying as well, because you never know what people are capable of, and so it's really scary.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if we, you know, we're not famous, we're not in the public eye, but imagine if you were receiving threats like that. It's terrifying.
Oh, absolutely.
But I always think that hurt people, so something must, although it doesn't condone it, something must not be okay. And so I think that maybe kind of helps detach yourself a little bit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think it's them that have the problem.
Yeah, I'm not the problem, they're the problem.
Yeah,
it's not me. So it kind of allows you to detach yourself. But I couldn't imagine going through that. I'm so glad I'm not the public guy, to be honest.
Not yet. Just wait after this.
Maybe this is it. Start of something big. We'll better take a break.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk with me in the studio today, Lucy Mulligan and Teresa Jacobson-Gonzalez. If you're listening at home and you'd like to get involved, you're obviously too shy. We're putting you off today. I'm sorry. You can get in touch, though. This is how.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
What a beautiful day. It's a wonderful life.
Okay, we are going to talk about the ick factor. From nasty nails to eating while talking, the icks that can kill a relationship. The ick, basically, is a dating term that describes being suddenly put off someone you are attracted to, usually because of something small or quite specific. So smelling bad was the top ick. I think we could all
agree with that one.
That would be definitely off-putting. This was followed by those who pretend to be more knowledgeable about something than they really are.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But annoying.
Yes.
That's what I'd say.
Yes, annoying. Those who are overbearing or rude. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't stand for people being rude. And also, we've got someone... 11% of people have ended it with someone who clapped when a plane landed.
Yeah, I've heard of that one before.
Really?
That's funny.
Yeah, I've heard of that before.
It's really funny. So you were saying, Lucy, this is a big thing in the UK. People talk about getting the ick.
Yeah, so a lot of my friends, you know, they'll come to me, talk about dating, like, oh, I got the ick. Oh, I was seeing that person, but no, I've got the ick now. Like, and it seems like, well... I've had the ick before. I mean, we all have in our own way. Something just puts you off and it's, you can't get over it.
What kind of thing comes up? Is there like a regular thing that comes up with friends? And
the common thing would be just, I think, hygiene. I think hygiene's the most.
Yes.
I think that's universal. I think everyone likes somebody that smells good, is clean, has nice hands. But I think... I remember one of my friends coming to me and telling me that she went on a date with a person, with a guy, and he was just so rude to the waitstaff. And that was it. And they left the restaurant. She said, thank you very much. And he said, oh, you'd like to see me again? She said, no, because the way you spoke to that waitress was horrendous. And that's not okay.
Yeah.
But I think... There's such a whole range, like clapping on a plane lands. I don't know if I'd break up with somebody because of that.
Well, no, because if you're on a plane, you've obviously gone on holiday together, so you must be quite far in your relationship.
Maybe that was the last straw.
Don't clap. Nah, I'm done.
That's it.
That's really funny. You've not heard of this expression?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No, this goes to show I've been here too long in Spain, I think. But no, I can see how that can happen. You've been with somebody, especially for a short period of time, and they're starting to do things you don't like. I mean, smell for me is really important. Personal hygiene. But I can, you know, it's even nervous tics or things that over a period of time probably can make you nervous.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably good to well, good communication hopefully will, you know, sort of at least stop that other thing happening. For you to feel bad about it. I don't know if that's even possible.
It's funny, isn't it? If people are set in their ways, again, this could come from depending on the generation. If somebody's behaving a certain way and they've always behaved that way, you know, for someone to come along and say, oh, I can't stand the way you do this, they might think, well, that's me, that's my personality, that's the way I am. Yeah. You know, people can get really...
Yeah, exactly.
People can get really offended, and there can often be this... I mean, I haven't been dating for a long time now because I'm happily married, but I remember when dating, you know, people can get really hung up on the whole trying to change someone. You know, it's something that a trap that women can sometimes fall into, you know, when they're dating. They think, oh, he's great, but I wish he was more like this, or I wish he didn't do that, or and that's kind of a dangerous path to go down. If you want to change someone so much, then they're maybe not the they're right not the one. Right person
exactly.
for you.
Yeah. Just find someone else, it'd be a lot easier.
Exactly.
But I think probably with the dating situation now, there's so much choice. I don't know,
online shopping. You know, you have all the apps now. I mean, you can just sit and flick through, and
that's where this ick thing has come from. You know, you can be fussy. You can start saying, you know, I don't like this, I want this. You know, it's a shopping list.
And also because dating is so accessible now, so it's so common. It's not you have to wait for somebody to come and approach you. You can find them on an app and swipe right, and you know.
And is that what's happening at university? A lot of people dating online. I'd say
a lot of people. I mean, when I was single in my first 2 years of university, you know, you have the dating apps, and your friends do as well. And it's funny because you'll see people that you know on there, and you'll see them portray themselves in kind of like a different light. You know, your friend from class, you'll see them and you think, oh, I didn't really think you'd portray yourself like that, or express that you are you're a gym lad, or, you know, just these strange things that, you know, the way that people portray themselves in like a romantic setting is interesting. But yeah, definitely 100%, it's all online.
But I think it's when the reality hits, isn't it? You meet people.
You walk into the bar and you see them. A bit different from the photo.
That's when you get that ick, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say so.
You want to give them the kick.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good little phrase.
That could happen. Yes, I've never done online dating. Never experienced it. Have you?
Well, I obviously have.
Yeah.
I obviously have. But it never was successful.
No.
For me.
No,
I think it's difficult. I think you have to know people, and I think maybe the people that are online want short term and you want long term, or the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really difficult to get to know somebody. Like, that's the whole thing. It's so difficult to get to know somebody over text, and then you build up an expectation, or you paint a picture in your mind and you meet them. You think, oh, well, that's not how I expected you to talk. Like, that's something that always shocked me.
Okay.
People's accents.
Yeah.
I think, oh, okay, I didn't expect you to speak that way.
Massive difference.
And that was just really strange.
Well, we have a lot of friends, actually, that met online. A lot of friends and are happily married.
Oh, how lovely.
In fact, lots of friends now.
I know out of my mum's, like, generation, I know, like, friends that she went to university with, or, you know, friends that I grew up with and then got divorced or whatever happened, and they met their partners online. And so it's not any common for my generation. I think it's common for like my mum as well.
Interesting.
I don't know about my grandparents. They can only just about work WhatsApp. Might be a bit too much.
We've got an article here talking about Love Island, but for middle-aged couples. So Davina McCall apparently is begging ITV to let her host a version of the holiday dating show, but for middle-aged couples. Do we think this would work? Do we think it would be entertaining?
This is where, and I confess, I've never seen it.
Okay.
So what happens on Love Island?
It's basically a load of young people, young attractive people. They're always attractive, looking to meet a partner.
Right.
So there's guys.
So it's a bit of a sort of first dates thing, but on an island.
They're living together.
They're trapped in a villa.
That's the thing.
They have no contact with the outside world, and I think it's like six boys, six girls, and they have to couple up immediately without even speaking to each other. Yeah. And then obviously you can imagine dynamics develop and people, they recouple every few episodes. Mm. So they'll steal one another from each other or, you know, and people come in and there's a bombshell and to try and really stir up the pot. So yeah, that's the kind of, and then somebody wins. Yeah.
Okay. What do they win?
£50,000.
Okay.
And they either decide to share it or keep it.
Okay. So. Do they share it?
Yeah, I think they always have. I think the whole idea originally was to kind of, I think in the Australian version or the Swedish version, I remember seeing a clip and the guy, they got all the way to the end, they won and the guy kept it.
No.
And she took her off her shoe and threw it at him. I think it was oh, a Scandinavian goodness. Version of the show. And, oh, and I think that was awful. What they wanted, ITV wanted that to happen.
It's a bit more scandalous, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
more dramatic.
Absolutely. That would be horrendous.
So this would be for middle-aged.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
I do.
Definitely.
I think it'd be
hilarious.
Well, hilarious for you, but...
No, I just think it would be
normal for us.
I think it would just be so, cute and nice and lovely to see.
Hard work.
Yeah.
But it's true. I think middle-aged people find it more difficult to date and to find the right one. And so it's probably a good idea.
I think it would be it would make it very different. So if you've got middle-aged people who maybe are divorced, you know, people who've been married before, people who have already got children, perhaps, you know, with a whole load of experience that you obviously wouldn't get from the normal Love Island. You know, some of the people going on Love Island have only had one boyfriend. You know, some of them are really they're starting out. You know, they're in their 20s most of the time. So yeah, if you had people in their kind of 40s, 50s, it would be totally different because a lot of people will have already been married or already had kids and they'd have a whole new kind of outlook on life and dating and relationships. I think it would be really interesting.
They probably have more viewers. I might even start watching it.
That is something I would definitely sit and watch with my mum. Yeah. My mum cannot stand Love Island. It's just not something she wants, she has any interest in.
Yeah.
And especially if Davina's hosting it. That would be fantastic.
Yes, definitely. But also, I think it would be interesting if it wasn't so much about looks. Because obviously all the people who go on Love Island are always, you know, deemed to be really attractive. But I remember seeing the odd clip of, you know, when some of them are talking about, I can't remember what was the clip from a few years about this girl that didn't realise Essex wasn't another country.
Oh, yeah. It was a girl from Liverpool and she was asking about Brexit.
That's it.
That's what it was. And she said, can I go to Ibiza? And, you know, the other people, she goes, and she kept saying, what else did she kept saying? She kept saying stuff about, but isn't Ibiza, where is Ibiza? And they're like, well, it's an island. She's like, no, it's not. Is it not in England? You know, stuff like this. She just had no geographical. No,
yeah.
And somebody was trying to explain what Brexit was to her. And she just had no.
Yeah. And she said, but I can still go on holiday to Spain.
Yeah. She's like, but as long as I can still go. And what if something about trees she was going on about? Because I think she got confused with like treaty and trees. And
was she attractive?
Oh, she was absolutely drop dead gorgeous.
No, there
she
we
was
are.
But
there
you
we
wouldn't want her on your quiz team.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think it would be nice to see people with a bit of substance and a bit more conversation about them. That would be interesting to watch. So it's not just about what they look like. It would be, you know, it would be intellectually stimulating as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
We shall see. You never know. Stranger things have happened. We better take our last ad break.
This is Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk. Welcome to the last little part. We've got about 10 minutes with me in the studio today, Lucy Mulligan and Teresa Jacobson-Gonzalez. So there's an article here talking about BA's trendy jumpsuit. So I'll show you the picture here. So the ladies on BA, instead of wearing a skirt, they can wear a jumpsuit, which I think looks great and is a lot more practical than wearing a skirt, I reckon. What do we think? Do we think, oh no, they should be in skirts? Or do we think, yes, why not?
Well, we're back to what the traditional crew looked like and what the what we used to call air hostesses were supposed to look like. And I think that that has all changed. And you can have all type of body shapes and people now. Mm. And so clothes should have changed to, you know, in accordance with that, yeah. I think. And I think it looks very comfortable. Very practical.
Yeah. Yeah, it just looks easier as well. There's a lot less effort. Exactly. I mean, I remember when I was in school and in sixth form, and I used to have to wear a suit with a skirt. And in the last few weeks of school, we were allowed to wear trousers. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, what? Like, it was just so much easier.
Yeah.
And so much more comfortable. And
annoying it was the last few weeks.
I know, yeah, it was. And I went out and bought one pair and I thought, right, that's it. But yeah, I don't see why. Could you imagine serving people in high heels? I think it's awful that they have to wear heels as well.
I do.
That would be awful. I would absolutely hate that. You know, I've waitressed and I don't think I could do it in a skirt and high heels. Like, it's usually trainers.
Yeah, exactly.
Something comfortable.
Yeah, I think it's... I don't think they should be made to wear high heels either.
But I think the whole glamour of air hostesses is kind of past, you know.
I think so.
Because now flying is so, it's so normal for everybody and it's been so commercialized. The whole jet set BA crew is kind of just gone away, really, I'd say.
Although some airlines are still very much adhering to that. I mean, even the ones that we're taking very regularly, Wizz Air, for instance, which is actually the greenest airline around, apparently, at the moment, they have that very original stewardess look. And they are, you know, very young girls and very prim and proper. And it makes you feel like you're in another century in a way.
I wonder if any women would object to women not wearing skirts anymore, or whether it's just the men that, obviously it might sound a bit sexist, but it's a genuine question whether, you know, if men would say, oh no, you know, it's traditional, this is how they should be dressed, or whether women would say, oh no, I think they should be in skirts, or whether as women we all understand wearing a skirt and tights and heels on a daily basis whilst doing a lot of walking isn't the most comfortable, practical thing. So therefore...
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, I think probably, this is just me guessing here, the older women that were part of that very glamorous BA lifestyle, traveling with, you know, these on these long-haul flights, I think they might kind of want to keep the tradition of the skirt simply because it was tradition and that was the look and that was the style.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think younger people would really care, to be honest. No. I could not care less if I was sat on an airplane and a lady that was giving me a bag of peanuts was wearing a skirt or tutu or, you know, her pajama buttons for all I care. Yeah, exactly.
I think it is an age thing, and I think it's a gender topic as well, which is obviously very important now. And things like uniforms of any sort are being looked at closely. And that, I suppose that means BA are up to date.
I've got some serious subjects here, but as we've got 5 minutes left, I'm not going to move on to serious subjects. We'll do a couple of lighter ones. Neighbours 6 months silent. Everybody needs good neighbours, as the theme song goes, but 25% of Britons have not spoken to anyone living around them for at least 6 months. How well do you know your neighbours?
My first thought was, that's ridiculous. But now I think about it, my neighbours back in the UK where I live by myself, I don't know any of them. I don't know any of them at there all. Now I think I know the person that lives across me as a dog.
Yeah.
And I've thought to myself, oh, I'd offer to look after the dog, but I've never done it.
Isn't it interesting?
It's so strange.
And it makes you feel really bad when you think about it.
And I have lived there for almost a year now.
Okay.
That's really bad.
So... would you feel comfortable doing something about it, i.e. knocking on the door with a pie or something, going, hello?
I don't think I would.
No,
I think
it's weird, isn't it?
Because now I think about, my mum knows absolutely everyone that lives in our urbanisation, and she knows, you know, they all... she knows when who's...
that's in Spain.
Yeah, that's in Spain. So, and my grandparents the same. They know who's coming and going. You know, it's just normal because it's a community. Whereas I live in a similar situation, a block of flats. I just, if a stranger turned up to my front door asking to come in with a pie, I'd probably say, thank you for the pie, but
No, you don't need to ask to come in.
Oh, okay.
No, no, just say introduce. I wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I did think
I
about it.
I was half joking about the pie, but I mean, I suppose that. But
pie's always welcome.
But yeah, I mean, you could just knock on the door and say, "Hi, I'm Lucy. I live next door. I just wanted to introduce myself because I thought it would be nice to know my neighbour."
Yeah.
And if you, you know, depending on the situation, obviously, if they said, "Oh, yeah, lovely. Why don't you come in for a cup of tea?" You might not feel comfortable doing that. It might not be the right thing to do. So yeah. You wouldn't necessarily need to go into their house or invite them to your house. It's just a or you might think automatically, "Oh, what a lovely lady. She seems really sweet. I'd love to have a cup of tea with her." Do you know what I mean? So you don't put yourself in a dangerous situation.
I think it's a cultural thing. I think in Spain especially, your neighbours are always, you always say hello, goodbye.
Yeah.
You might stop and chat about something. I think that's very normal.
Not even with just neighbours. I feel like in Spain it's so common to walk past someone on the street and say hello.
Sure. Yeah.
And you'd be seen as rude if you didn't. Whereas in the UK, I'd get into a lift with somebody in my building and I'd sit in silence for the whole 8 floors.
Yeah.
It's
weird, isn't it? Awkward. It's tense.
Yeah. I've made some very good friends as neighbours. One of my best friends in London was my neighbour for 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And so absolutely, best friends. But I also know a situation recently of somebody who's been living next door to somebody for 9 years and only has said hello to them over the fence and maybe talk about the weather and that's it. And then suddenly when they were moving, they said, "Oh, well, would you like to have a drink or shall we actually have a meal together, you know, in the garden or something?" You know, because they realised they had a lot in common, but nobody ever made that first move, really.
Mm.
So I think it's a cultural thing as well.
Probably fear as well. I think that's probably, it's fear of, are they going to think I'm strange? I think that's why I maybe haven't. Because I did think about it when I moved in. I thought, oh, surely I go next door and just say, "Hi, I've moved in.
Yeah.
Here's my number if my music is ever too loud," or something like that.
Mm.
And I think it was kind of just fear of maybe rejection or just them being she's a bit strange. That's not normal.
It's not a normal thing to do.
Well, see,
it's
I would say...
Isn't that a shame?
But it's not a strange thing to do. I wouldn't think, "Oh, gosh, what a weird person." I'd maybe just think, "Oh, I wouldn't do that myself." So I wouldn't say it's unusual.
At the end of the day, you're not a weird person. So if someone knocked on your door and you could tell straight away that they weren't a weird person, you'd think, how lovely, wouldn't
exactly.
you? If someone knocked on your door especially. And said, "Oh, hi, I just wanted to introduce myself. I live next door."
Especially
and you knew straight
pie.
Away that you could tell they seem lovely.
Yeah.
You'd go, "Oh, wow, so nice to meet you. Do you want to come in for a cup of tea?"
Of course.
And it would be lovely. But if you thought they were weird, you'd go, "Okay, hello, thank you. nice to meet you," and close the door, done.
Mm-hmm. I had an elderly neighbour who I felt very sorry for a long time, and she was English, furthermore, retired here. And one day I said, "That's it, I'm going to stop, I'm going to speak to her." I said, "Hello, I just want you to know, I just live up the corridor, and if you need anything," she turned around and she went, "I know exactly who you are." I thought, okay.
What did you do?
I have no idea, but I'm not going to speak to her again.
Oh, how weird.
Wait, she didn't say anything other than
that was it.
What a shame.
Watch out for the neighbours.
Oh, that's a shame. Oh, I don't let that put you off.
Don't worry.
That won't happen to you.
Don't talk
sure.
to everybody.
I'll come back.
You'll be
I'll
fine.
Come back in a few weeks and let you know how it went.
I'll
email in.
Well, thank you both so much for coming on today. It was lovely to see you both, Lucy and Teresa. And thank you for listening at home. And sorry you didn't feel confident enough to get involved. You will do another time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.